frankly, if you think that, you're a dinosaur. Yeah. And you're going to fail. Yeah. You might keep your clients. You might make a small fortune doing what you're doing, but your way is done. IQ is what it is. I'm as dumb as I'm going to be. I'm not going to get any dumber or smarter than I am right now. But EQ is a skill.
You want to grow and go and get there. Sometimes upward, sometimes nowhere. You've got the ideas, you're looking up at the clouds. But how do you start standing out of the crowd? So build it with us from the ground up.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to From the Ground Up. I'm Zach Conway. I'm here with Kelsey McKenna, and we're recording live from Shift, the go-to industry event for financial advisors who celebrate the impact of holistic, human-first financial advice. And we're excited because we're here with a guest who lives and breathes this topic, Brian Portnoy. He's the founder of Shaping Wealth, a leading learning and development platform for financial advisors powering human-first financial guidance. Thanks for joining us, Brian.
My pleasure. Good to see you guys.
You as well. We dragged you in here from the hallway to come have our conversation, so we appreciate it.
It was a friendly drag.
Yeah, it was a polite drag, exactly. But Kelsey, let's dive into it. We were just having a conversation about why we're actually here at this conference that I think will jump us into the conversation.
Yeah, so human first advice. We love this topic. We believe in it so much at Seeds. And we really just wanted to start off by talking about, you know, the fact that this is a separate conference and that this isn't something that's necessarily widely adopted across our entire industry yet. Just getting your take on why that is. So why is it separate? Why isn't human first advice something that's just always been a part of the financial services industry or financial advice?
Yeah, it's an interesting question and not one that I've actually ever heard posed that way. I hadn't really thought about it much. Everything that's happening here is both very old but brand new.
Yeah.
And so there's a little bit of a tension or a betwixt and between thing going on here. I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, the average financial advisor cares deeply mm-hmm. about the families that she, you know, takes care of in terms of financial well-being. And so, you know, you go to a typical conference and the client experience and client service, yeah, of course, those are front and center. At the same time, however, client-centric advice is not human-centric advice, and that there is a lot that we know from science and research as well as practice that distinguishes sort of truly human advice in terms of showing up with people in as they are versus who we want them to be. So client service advice, you know, very, very personalized, you know, ethical, that's great. But embracing like what makes people tick, that's a next level of understanding and engagement and practice. And I think what's been built here by Ross Marino and others, and, you know, I and my firm have been part of this from the beginning. There's a different level that we're exploring here that once you open that door to people, they want to go there, but you kind of have to show them how.
Yeah. So that's such a great answer. So we were just talking about this. So customer centricity, like this idea of like a customer centric experience versus a human first or like a human centered experience. Can you just go a little bit longer on that? Like go a little deeper on the difference between the two and for an advisor, if they were assessing their practice and saying, am I doing this? Like, mm-hmm. am I doing customer centricity or am I really delivering a human first experience or, you know, service delivery? What would that look like?
Yeah. So I would first kind of, you know, sort of draw the map of where the industry's been over the last couple generations. So going back 40 or 50 years, you know, moving from customer centric to client centric to mm-hmm. human centric. Sometimes I sort of jokingly call it the 50-year arc from Gordon Gekko to Brené Brown. You know, Blue Horseshoe loves Ennicott Steele. Bud Fox was a financial advisor.
Yeah.
You know, he put his best clients into his best stocks. I mean, keep in mind, it wasn't that long ago that having access to the capital markets was impossible for regular people. There wasn't E-Trade or Schwab. That was a 1990s thing, which was sort of a blink in the eye not long ago. So not that, you know, only a few decades ago, were advisors in a position to give clients market access by buying stocks and bonds on their behalf and basically filling brokerage roles. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's deep, but it's relatively narrow. And that's a customer-centric thing. Hey, I'm going to sell you a product. That product hopefully is suitable and virtuous, but that's it. Then planning came into the fore. It was 50 years ago this year that The first CFP was issued, but there was like four CFPs in 1973. Now there's hundreds of thousands or something like that. Financial planning really wasn't a big business until a decade or 15 years ago. This is when we're getting into, okay, what are your goals? What makes you special? What makes you distinct? And that is, you know, client-centric advice. But there was still an element of, it was still sort of a service versus an experience, meaning, oh, okay, you want to retire at age 65 with a $3 million portfolio and at a 4% withdrawal rate, you're going to have the following cash flow. Okay, great. So the client says, this is what I want, and you go ahead and fill that. That goals-based wealth management is great. It's better than just the customer-centric focused, but it's not nearly as deep and as fulfilling as you can get. The pivot from client to human-centric is when we really appreciate that, as Dan Gilbert once said, social psychologists, human beings are works in progress who mistakenly think they're finished. Our clients come to us in the middle of a story, and they continue to write and edit and update that story. And we have the privilege and the power to walk alongside them to help them not only get to where they want to go, but become who it is they want to be. And this doesn't have to be woo-woo or squish or psychobabble. This is actually just meeting humans where they are, living a story. Humans are not particularly numerate, but we are wired for story. And so if you can meet people where they are, have the right types of conversations, structure meetings the right way, help them exercise judgment and decision and wisdom in the right way, you're going to deliver a wealth management experience that they had formerly never even thought of, but could never go back to the old way. And at the same time, tell their neighbor and their sister and, you know, their friends, like, oh my gosh, this, I thought we were just going to be talking about the stock market. I thought we were just going to be talking about number go up. Right. But we're actually talking about the life that I want to live. And there are, you know, you could watch a lot of sports on TV and see advertisements from big firms saying words similar to this. But when you actually look at the process,
yeah,
they're just kind of, it's paint by numbers. It's sell a product. It's scale to as many people as possible. Human-centric advice is much more of a craft that can be scaled. It's harder. It can be scaled, but you're asking a different set of questions and you're leaning in a number of different ways.
So my dad, I always say I was lucky enough to grow up in the industry. My dad's been doing it for 40 plus years. And his story is along the lines of what you just shared, which is, you know, 43 years ago, started a financial, you know, an actual financial planning business, mm-hmm. not a sell products business. And yet, it was still about just accessing financial products. And so he delivered on that. So he was trying to convey the value to the end consumer of the mathematical stuff as it relates to a holistic financial plan and the human stuff 40 plus years ago. And yet you kind of had to default back to people's sort of fear and greed driven thoughts of, well, how do I just get a better return in my portfolio? And then he kind of delivered on that, right? Mm-hmm. Let me show you these solutions. And then all of a sudden the story was imperfect from the beginning. So it's sort of like entrenched in our DNA. I want to go try to project out or maybe force you to make a guess about the future. So this is a standalone conference. What do you think the projection, what's the timeline where advisors more across the industry own the value of this? So beyond the dollars and cents, the academic inputs and outputs of, you know, financial planning, actually getting to human centricity. When is that at scale for mm-hmm. the industry? And then I guess the other part of it, the other side of the coin is, like, to your point on the advertisements and the end consumer, when does the end consumer actually acknowledge that that's the fundamental value? Because both of those things, I think, need to happen in parallel, right? We all need to get it. Mm-hmm. We need to understand it. We need to commit to it. But we also need to take a leap of faith, assuming that the end consumer is actually believing that that's the value. Because again, I go back to my dad. He's believed it for 40 plus years. Mm-hmm. But the end consumer is saying, show me the better return. And so we default back to a lot of that stuff. Curious how you think about that. How do we reach that escape velocity, if you will?
Yeah. So I'm not sure that we do. I'm not sure if that's the framing that I would adopt. I would probably offer something adjacent, but not exactly the same. And I'd do it through the lens of supply and demand. So what is the supply of human first advice and what is the demand for human first advice? Let's start on the demand side. What does the average person want? Well, they have no idea because the industry has done a crap job at explaining what's possible. And so we do default to, okay, you know, what was the rate of return on my portfolio? Or even worse, you know, is the individual product that you sold me in the context of that portfolio, is that singular product, you know, working out? Is it doing what you said? So, you know, I have an investing background, so I understand the math of all of that, but it's a very narrow and tinny conversation. And I don't think many people fully appreciate what financial well-being is all about and how it fits into a broader life well-lived. You know, when we think about holistic well-being, I think there are four parts. There's physical well-being, emotional well-being, spiritual well-being, and financial well-being. And the first three, not only do we have sort of institutionalized help for that. So, you know, we've got doctors, we have clergy, we have therapists and counselors. Financial well-being is sort of the odd man out, so to speak, because we have such a hard time talking about money. It's the most uncomfortable topic, you know, more so than marriage and divorce, politics, religion, mortality. Money is all the time the number one thing we don't want to talk about. So we're already in this tough spot where people don't know what they want generally from money, let alone what they want from a financial advisor. And I think this is roughly accurate, but something like only 21% of Americans have a financial advisor, and relatively few of those 21% are even having conversations remotely like this one. So right now, I wouldn't say there's much of a demand for this, which then creates problems on this on the supply front, because you have a legacy industry that is driven by product sales. And that's still, you know, very, very prevalent. Yes. I mean, there's a sample bias in what I see because I hang out with people who do this. But if you look at the industry writ large, there's still a lot of product sales. There's still just a lot of focus on the investment piece. And, you know, advisors often just don't want to break out of what's working. I mean, retention rates are 98, 99%. Most clients don't leave most of the time. And so there's a lot of, you know, advisors, older advisors who are like, well, it's not broken. So why would I fix it? I mean, there's an old line that, you know, progress happens one funeral at a time. And so I think from a timing point of view, over the next half generation to full generation, you'll see things shift to, you know, use the word of the conference. You'll see things shift pretty significantly, because as millennials, let alone Gen Z and then Gen Alpha take over the wealth of the world, they're much more open to these conversations of holistic well-being, of flourishing, of financial well-being. So there's going to be a lot of experimentation. It's a massive industry. There's hundreds of millions of potential clients. There's hundreds of thousands of advisors and vendors. It's going to be a wild experimentation for a decade plus. And I'll just, you know, wrap up by saying that it's not for everybody. There are going to be lots of advisors as well as lots of clients or potential clients who say, I don't care. I just want more money.
Yeah.
And whatever. That's fine. That's totally fine. But for those who want something more, I think there will be more supply of this going forward. And conferences like Shift won't be this standalone thing off in Orlando on a random March day. It'll be kind of bolted on to the mega conferences.
We'll be right back with the show. But first, I wanted to tell you a bit about PodPony, the production team behind From the Ground Up. Are you on the lookout for a podcast producer? How about a content boost or even someone to help take your brand to the next level? Well, let's face it, creating content and keeping up with a content schedule just isn't easy. That's where PodPony comes in. You're all-in-one content partner for thought leaders and business owners. From media coaching, podcast production, blogs, webinars, newsletters, website support, social media, or any other facet of the content world, they'll help you create customized content that turns heads and brings in business. All you have to do is show up and do what you love. They'll handle the rest. So saddle up with PodPony by visiting podpony.com and start your content journey today. Now back to the show.
So how do you see this being brought to life? So firms who are starting to adopt this way of working with their clients and are experimenting probably with everything across their whole business model, like how do you see, what are some of the first steps that you see firms taking who really are trying to shift and experiment and move in this direction?
Yeah, it's such a good question. And I would anchor an answer just on the general concept of learning. Learning and development. So, you know, we can make life pretty simple by saying that what the typical advisor wants is to retain her current clients and to gain new clients. Right. Like that's it. That's the game. Mm-hmm. And if you can do that, lots of other good things happen. I think as financial planning turns from an industry into a profession, there's that next step where it's understood that if this is truly a profession, you need to not only be good at something once, you need to go through ongoing training. And so what I'm seeing is increasingly that learning is being seen as part of an overall growth strategy. Mm-hmm. As much as we want to be better on client experience and that, there's also an equal, if not larger, demand for talent development. Mm-hmm. You know, what does it mean to hire, train, motivate someone throughout their career? So the human first stuff that we're talking about, generally speaking, is going to fit into a learning and development bucket. And, you know, what I'm seeing at Shaping Wealth from the ground up is an increasing number of firms who are truly learning, leaning into an L&D mandate. And what is it they want to learn? Well, yes, they want to learn about investments and insurance and estates and taxes and all of that kind of technical knowledge, absolutely essential. But increasingly, it's like, well, we're not just delivering expertise, we're connecting with people, we're asking the right questions, we're listening, we're creating these experiences that has nothing to do with your knowledge of tax law or what a Sharpe ratio is. Mm-hmm. It has to do with emotional intelligence, behavioral finance, positive psychology, neuroscience. Those are all stacks of skills and disciplines that can be packaged for advisors and advisory teams to learn. And just like in physical health, you know, the fact that you can go to the gym once and do some bicep curls doesn't mean you're going to be strong. It means you're just going to be sore and probably unhappy. The way you get stronger is that you go through the reps, you go through a process. And what I'm seeing is an increasing number of firms who appreciate that this is a practice that needs to be maintained over time and embedded in a particular type of culture. And that's, I think those are the firms that will continue to thrive and succeed. And over time, not necessarily today or tomorrow, but over time, take customers from those who aren't investing in this sort of thing.
Can you, I think we talk a lot about, and really the premise of the podcast is as advisors, we have to get so much right. And we have to do so many different things, especially if you're an independent firm. Right. You're building a business, right? You're building a company. You are needing to hire the right talent, train the right talent, you know, keep the doors open, deal with the P&L of the business, mm-hmm. right? You need to have the academic knowledge and be able to deliver the actual core service of financial planning mm-hmm. and, you know, have your credentials and know what you're talking about and what you're delivering. And now we're saying to advisors also, you really have to have this skill set of being, you know, akin to a therapist and being able to pull out of people the core, most important parts of what's going on in their head, what they're not even really willing to have conversations about within their own family. To mm-hmm. your points earlier, you know, money is complex and it shapes our relationships. So to what extent are we at, is it that we're asking advisors to do too much? And if so, how do firms you talk to think about sort of the segmentation of skill sets within mm-hmm. their team?
Yeah.
Right? Is it that every advisor, every sort of like leader advisor needs to be all of those things?
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, I think that'll be one of the challenges of reaching critical mass with this whole concept.
Is, right.
Okay. You need to, you know how to do your books. You need to know how to, again, do your hiring, run your team, run your entire business, do financial planning and have the toughest conversations that your clients within their own families aren't willing to have.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we think about that, right? Your learning and development point, like what is the practical way to try to deliver on that within a team?
Yeah. I mean, the first thing I would do is not conceptualize any of this as an add-on or a bolt-on or as a nice-to-have.
Right.
I mean, we're meeting with, talking with, engaging with people on some of the most important and sensitive issues in their lives. The fact that someone would think that choosing one ETF versus another is the hard decision, and then you get to the people stuff. Frankly, if you think that, you're a dinosaur, yeah, and you're going to fail. Yeah. You might keep your clients. You might make a small fortune doing what you're doing, but your way is done.
Yeah.
I mean, sorry. So thinking of sort of creating an encompassing experience for the people that you work with, and embracing sort of this human first philosophy as sort of a nice to have is the wrong step. The way I'd think about, so there's two issues. One is I'll make a point about mechanics versus guides, and then I'll make a second point about division of labor. So on the first, the way I think about it is, you know, when I talk to advisors, and sort of all I do, you know, I can name 30 different things they're doing on a daily basis, and it's completely overwhelming. At the same time, I think it just boils down to two things. You are managing money and you're managing humans. So you are a mechanic and you're a guide. You're an expert in investments and insurance and estates and all that kind of stuff. And those mechanical bits are increasingly commoditized, especially on the investment side, which I know is a little bit of a controversial thing to say, but
we agree.
Yeah. But yeah, I think investing is largely a solved problem, but for some reason, the average advisor is out there as an expert in the economy and the markets and investment selection,
claiming that that's their differentiation,
which is absurd.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just absurd. I'm sorry. There's no evidence for that.
But you know what it is? It all ties back to, it's just more comfortable, right? For an advisor, it's more comfortable to sell into fear and greed, mm-hmm, or really ultimately what is just fear and the motivation of fear, because it emotionally resonates more quickly. And you don't have to take this leap of faith as the advisor to have that, let's say, air quotes, harder conversation,
right,
about the real motivations and how you can help solve those fundamental issues within the family. Again, my dad talks about it. It was like, no one understood what the heck what we were offering as a solution. So it's like, oh, you want me to talk about, you know, an ETF solution because maybe it'll get you a better return? It was easier. And again, it goes back, that's sort of in our DNA.
Well, this is the distinction between mechanic and guide. Like, you can build the perfect engine, what appears to be the optimal portfolio, the optimal, you know, insurance portfolio. You have your estates set up just so. But building the perfect engine is very different than asking whether you're heading in the right direction. And then what do you do at the 30 or 40 or 50 forks in the road you're going to experience as an adult? Where those pivots are inevitable but unpredictable.
Right.
And so what is the skill set that you bring to bear in terms of your fortitude and resilience, your emotional intelligence, your decision-making ability, your ability to form habits, your ability to conceptualize what is a life well lived and then pursue and achieve that. So, you know, the mechanical piece of our business is well-worn. It is non-negotiable in its importance, but it's actually only half the battle.
Right.
And it's not what comes first. Both mechanic and guide happen at the same time. In terms of division of labor, it's a really interesting question that you asked. And different firms are experimenting. You know, we're working with a big firm now. There's hundreds of people at the firm. And there's sort of a baseline expectation of being familiar with some of these perspectives and skills. But then they have dedicated people who are professionals who are dedicated to certain types of hard conversations, who are, you know, the next level empath, who can intervene in difficult family conversations, that, you know, a dude who's more interested in picking the right funds and staring at red lines on a screen, that's just not his thing, and that's fine. Like, I'm not judging that person. I'm just saying that his skill set is not the right skill set when you have a husband and wife who are considering divorce, and there is going to be a hard series of conversations about the financial elements of that. There are bona fide experts in that space,
right,
who go through deep training. And so there are firms that are large enough and forward-looking enough to really begin to chart out what that division of labor So when you need a particular expert in a particular situation, you can deploy that. I think more of the default is, or, well, I don't know if it's the default, but what we see more often than not, maybe the better way of putting it, is that you're getting whole companies up to speed. I mean, most financial planning firms, even ones with many billions of assets, aren't that large from a people point of view. I mean, forget the wirehouses and the bigger, you know, broker dealers. You know, that's a somewhat different conversation. Those firms are absolutely, you know, so massive. But especially in the independent RIA space, you know, we're seeing demand for kind of baseline skill development, just so everybody gets on the same page. And then from there, what happens is somebody raises their hand. They're like, oh, I love this stuff. I want to lean into this. And then it ends up that there's not only a career opportunity, but for the firm, there's a commercial opportunity to go deeper. And that person can take on a role that augments the already, you know, very good service offering.
Yeah.
But it's an experiment. It's totally experimental right now.
To your point, I think if you're not sort of entrenching it in the DNA of your firm, mm-hmm. right? So everybody's not going to be the chief behavioral officer
right.
of the business, right? And there's different levels, and you may need outside resources and certainly platforms like yours, at least to get firms up and running in the process. But unless everybody knows that this is within your team, knows that this is how you do things mm-hmm. now moving forward, to your point, it can't be an add-on. The second it's an add-on, one person's going to sort of level up in this area, but no one else fully embraces it.
Yeah, it's,
it's not part of your brand. It's not part of
the empathetic one. Let's send her into this right, hard right. conversation.
Somebody started crying, so you know, throw somebody into the meeting to solve the problem. Yeah, and I think that's part of what solves ultimately this scale thing of yeah. how this becomes real across the industry is like firms on their websites need to say that this is part of their core value proposition. Every team member is not going to be perfect at it, but it has to be core to the business or it fails.
Yeah. And let me come back to a comment you made just in passing that I think is important. I meant to touch on it. You used the word therapy and sort of the move toward advisors becoming therapists. I would want to strongly disagree and draw a bright line.
Yeah.
There is a line, or as shades of gray and lines between what counts as advice versus coaching versus therapy. In fact, Shaping Wealth, we have whole programs on where is the line between advice and therapy? How do you know when you've crossed it? What do you do to get back? Because we are not qualified to be therapists.
Yeah.
That is a very serious issue. One that has, you know, ethical and legal consequences
right.
if you kind of go to the wrong place. At the same time, I've given hundreds of speeches on this over the last decade, and I frequently ask the audience, who here has ever felt like a therapist with their client? 100% of the hands in the room go up. And so the issue is unavoidable because if you're talking money, you're talking emotion. The line, there's financial literacy, but there's also emotional literacy, and these get all jumbled together in the flow of a normal client relationship. So my view is that we are not training people to be therapists. You can go become a therapist, but that is a very like specific and deliberate professional choice, whether you're a licensed clinical social worker or there are now certifications in financial therapy. There's a lot of different things going on there. What we're talking about is your, you know, typical advisor, someone who's in the trenches with clients solving real world problems every day, who appreciates effectively that a higher skill set in emotional intelligence, not just empathy, but self-awareness, conversation skills, relationship skills, leadership skills, emotional intelligence, it's a whole suite of skills. Unlike IQ, IQ is what it is. I'm as dumb as I'm going to be. I'm not going to get any dumber or smarter than I am right now. But EQ is a skill. EQ, you can have basically a lifelong commitment to getting better at the different dimensions there. And stay far away from the line where you go into therapy. You can deliver better listening, better questions, better engagement, generally higher emotional intelligence as just a standard advisor. And even if you think it's like squish or silly, which I think it's silly to think it's silly because it's just actually just being a good person to somebody else. it's commercially smart because my view is that when someone feels seen or heard in a conversation and they're like, oh, she was really listening to me. I felt understood. That's a referral worthy moment. You recommending a better ETF? Who gives a flip?
Yeah.
I mean,
well, it's amazing, right? This is the sort of irony of, for now, it's differentiation.
Right.
This is the only differentiation if you can really be good at this within your business. Brian, so we talked about people, advisors, I think, for the reason you just brought up about everybody's raising their hand saying they're a therapist, but they shouldn't be quite. And how do we draw those lines around what we should be doing versus what we shouldn't? And how in general advisors take the leap of faith to just figure this out and exactly how to bring this to life in their business. We always talk about you could have the anxiety now of trying to figure it out as an advisory firm. But the reality is firms just sort of kick the can of anxiety in their client experience today, mm-hmm. right? It's if you don't do deep discovery, you never really know your customer. Mm-hmm. You really never know who's on the other side of the table. And that exists in perpetuity. You're never really having an honest conversation with the person you're serving. So our encouragement to advisors is always like, just solve the front end.
Yep.
Just do it at the beginning. But could you share with us a little bit about your platform, your program, mm-hmm. and kind of getting advisors past that hurdle of anxiety? Take the leap of faith. This is the practical approach to try to start bringing this into the business.
Yeah.
Share a bit about how advisors are using you guys to do that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah. So Shaping Wealth is a coaching and content platform focused on human first financial guidance. I coined a term a few years ago, funded contentment. This is true wealth, the ability to underwrite a life that's meaningful to you, however you choose to define that and however you choose to update that through life's unpredictable but inevitable changes. So rich is about more. Wealthy or funded contentment is about enough, and that is not a number. It's a story, and it's an evolving story. The mission of my company is funded contentment for everyone. I think, you know, for many people, wealth is a mindset that can be learned. And what we want to do through the financial advice industry is train the guides who help people achieve funded contentment. It ends up that advisors are people too. And so we often like to say that we train player coaches in the search for funded contentment, because you're not only coaching others, you're on the field as well, trying to lead a life well-lived and having the money parts figured out. So we have a series of coaching programs. We have an immersive coaching program for experienced advisors called Building the Behavioral Advisor. It's often reviewed as the most transformative learning experience in someone's career. And that's very much because we believe human first advice first starts with the advisor as human. If you yourself haven't gone down the path, then you're not going to be as an effective guide as you can. So it's a very energizing, fun, but at times vulnerable experience that people love. We've got a more of a starter program for anybody in the industry, advisors, paraplanners, CSAs, marketing, sales, ops, assistants, it doesn't matter, called the Foundations of Behavioral Advice. We have an open cohort that's launching 1 month from today on April 24th, but it's something that we're going to be, you know, running back many times. And that's not a skill building experience. That's a culture building experience. It's okay. The building the behavioral advisor program, it's over the course of a few months. It's quite immersive. The foundations program is 4-hour workshop spread over four 1-hour sessions. And it's an opportunity to learn what this whole world is about. How our brains are wired, where the industry has come from, how to think about emotional intelligence, how to have better, less awkward conversations with clients about well-being and happiness. So it's a broad, fun, colorful, multimedia exercise in just knowing this world. So the immersive program, the light program, and then, you know, a variety of other workshops on emotional intelligence and well-being, as we've talked about, because this is such an emotional exercise, many, many advisors are struggling because there's no Kevlar vest.
Right.
For the emotions that you are experiencing from your clients, they're sharing everything with you. Sometimes things they haven't shared with their spouse or their priest. And you're there for it. And there's no getting around that this impacts people. Those people just happen to be financial advisors with no training whatsoever in how to process this stuff. So we offer, I think, very effective workshops on advisor well-being that people will often say, wow, you said some things out loud that I've even been scared to say to myself.
Right.
Because, you know, holistic advice sounds great. Comprehensive advice sounds great. And it is, because you're doing more for people. But the more you do, the more tired you become, the more vulnerable you become. And unlike doctors, clergy, and counselors, advisors are rarely even recognized as the helpers they are. But in those first three, the helpers have help. By law in America, therapists have to be in therapy. Doctors have support groups. Clergy have support groups. Advisors haven't even admitted they're helpers, let alone sought help.
Right.
So you talk about early days. So we're seeing the opportunity to really help out in the industry.
It's awesome. We're big fans. And again, it's because of those leaps of faith, I think what you guys are doing to help people actually make those leaps of faith is incredible, right? It kind of, the different programs feel like sort of safe on-ramps into this thought process and practical ways to actually bring it to life in the business. So we appreciate what you're doing. We appreciate you joining us today. The conversation has been awesome. If you haven't checked out Shaping Wealth, it's shapingwealth.com, right?
That's it. Yep.
Awesome. And if you haven't checked out Seeds, please do so. www.seedsinvestor.com. You can find us on LinkedIn. We're on X. We have a newsletter. We have this awesome podcast. So come find us. We appreciate it. And we'll see you next time.
Seeds Investor LLC is a registered investment advisor. Advisory services are only offered to clients or prospective clients, or Seeds and its representatives are properly licensed or exempt. All information has been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but its accuracy is not guaranteed. The information provided is for educational and informational purposes only and does not constitute investment advice and should not be relied on as such. It should not be considered a solicitation to buy or an offer to sell a security.